welcome to another episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 104. I am Mike Katsifrakis. It is April 1st, 2013. The internet is full of lies, and we are full of desire to talk about co-op gaming for the next hour or so.
Half-Life episode 3 coming out.
Oh, totally.
Tell your friends.
I'm joined by Nick Paleo, Jason Love, and the internet's own Locke Vincent.
He's so lovable.
Our delicate little sunflower.
That's right.
So we missed a week, but hopefully you're still with us, and let's chat about what we've been playing. And I'm going to start with Jason, and if you spoil BioShock, I will murder you.
Yes, me too. So don't talk about it.
You can say that you've been playing BioShock.
I've been playing BioShock.
Okay, that's
great. What else?
I'll just say this much of it. I've been really impressed so far with, and one of the things I said to Mike when we were chatting about this just online was, it's one of those games I feel like as soon as I get done playing it, I want to go back and play it again to just kind of see how everything that you've been presented with so far, everything that you've been shown, how that changes in context at the end. Because BioShock was the same. Like, the original BioShock, you went through, and after the big reveal there, you went back and you played it, and you're like, man, there's all this stuff that you did.
It's like, oh, I see what you did
exactly.
There.
Yeah. Exactly. So I have the same feeling with this game of wanting to go back and play it. But I've had a lot of fun. There's some people out there who said, you know, oh, you should play it on hard to really get a challenge, and I kind of can see where they're coming from on some of that, but I think just to enjoy the game, which is all I really care about, playing it on normal is fine.
In a game where you infinitely respawn when you die, changing the difficulty doesn't seem like it does anything but make it take longer to play.
Yeah, because yeah. The penalty this time around, like, they do have something of a penalty, which is you lose money and enemies actually get health back too. So
it's pretty negligible. You can hit one enemy at a time. Like, all the combat stuff I've faced in that game so far, and I'm pretty far in. I can talk to you about that later. All the combat scenarios I've seen, like, the worst that's happened where I've died is I've killed every normal enemy and one of the heavy hitters is still up.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all follow a predictable pattern, so sometimes it's just bad luck that kills you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, anyway, continue.
Yeah, I like the Vigors, too. I mean, some of them are sort of oldies but goodies from the other ones, but some of them are pretty interesting tools to play
with. What Vigors you rolling?
Actually, I'm really enjoying using the Murder of Crows, and right now also the Return to Cinder.
I see, I haven't gotten that far.
Spoiler.
Yeah, I roll Buck and Bronco and Devil's Kiss.
Also a good combo.
Because nice. if you throw the Devil's Kiss into someone affected by Buck and Bronco, wonderful things happen.
Yeah, and that's just it. Like, I like
fireworks.
I didn't notice
the combos
it until,
are great
until basically like you get the first time it pops up because they keep track of, you know, you get so many things achievements, but the combinations they have for the Vigors. When I first saw that, I was like, oh, I can do, like, this little combo thing. And I think the very first one I got was, like, Lightning Crows. And I was just like, oh, that's pretty cool. What else can I do? So I like that they have that sort of exploration, you know, with the Vigors into it. But anyways.
Yeah.
I'll let others talk more about their experience. Just actually got done.
Elizabeth is the best Disney princess of all time.
She is. She is. Really enjoy having played some Shattered Haven, which is from Arson Games. Valley Without Wind, AI War.
Good stuff.
It's different. I mean, for a zombie...
And Valley Without Wind wasn't.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
Touché.
Touché. And it's just probably taking me a little bit longer to kind of figure out the... I don't know, like the real heart and soul of the game. Like, I feel you can go through the first few stages of it, and you see what the game's about because it's still kind of like the tutorial trying to present it to you, but you're not quite to the point yet of, okay, this is like when the game sort of opens up. And what I'm wondering is if that happens or if what you see is what you get, and like that's it. So, you know, I'm still trying to play through some of that.
I don't know anything about it. Can you tell me like
yeah,
what
yeah.
style
what
it is?
What is it?
So it's a zombie game, but it's done like top-down, almost 8-bit style. Okay. So kind of like, what was that? Zombies Hotline Ate My Neighbors, or yeah, very similar to Hotline Miami.
does the soundtrack make you want to do drugs?
No. Then it's not. Mm. Yeah, then it's not like Hotline Miami. Anyways, top down, but it's rather than like you go around and you have like guns or something like that where you're killing zombies, it's environmental puzzles almost. So you're start off in a, you know, sometimes they're multi-screen stages, but you start off in a stage and you see your characters and you can see some of the zombies, and then you see some things to kill them that you can use to kill the zombies.
Right.
So then it's a matter of how do I navigate to there to get it and use that to kill them, or if it's multi-screen, then it's okay, I can only kill two of them, so let me go see what's else on the other screens. And when you get to the other screens, then it's now you have more zombies to deal with, more items. And the way they kind of keep things interesting is they distinguish between like these portal worlds and the overworld. And things that you pick up in the overworld and things that you can find, and there's a few overworld levels, you can carry through with you to other overworld levels. Anything that you get in portals, though, gets lost. So, you know, it's sort of, you have this little constant shift back and forth between what's in your inventory and what you can use.
Hmm.
So it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting to play, just from it's a different kind of zombie game to play. From a co-op perspective, it's local only, but it's drop in, drop out. Both people can be on the same keyboard, or you can do keyboard and gamepad.
Oh, cool.
It's fun, and it's like cool to work with, because you can pause the game and why don't you run over here and I'm going to distract these group of zombies so they come after me. While they're distracted, why don't you run around this way, go grab that set of iron tacks, because apparently iron, like, zombies have a really nasty case of allergies to iron. So go grab those iron tacks.
Tetanus affects them very, very quickly.
And lay them down so that, it kills off a few of the zombies while I distract them. So you can kind of work out these little strategies with your buddy. It works pretty well because you can pause the game, so that's good. But the problem that was pointed out to me as I was playing, and I've been playing video games for a while, but even still, it's quick and easy to kind of lose your character in this, because the characters themselves blend in with the background sometimes, not in the sense that like they have the same color palettes, but it's just sort of a big wash of a lot of things. So
they're tiny.
Yeah, and you're like this big. So it's sort of like, you know, your eyes kind of glaze over for a second, and you're sort of then running into something. So there's a little bit of that just visual distinction that's missing, but it's very different. I mean, like,
player highlighting needs some work. Is this game released, or is it in a beta right now?
It's released. They released it just this past weekend, I think.
Like, it was last week it came out, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like it's probably one of those games, too, that it's out now, and it feels like they've probably got some patches or something like that that they'll do.
The Arson guys, they're always like constantly updating their stuff and tweaking.
Yeah, they're pretty good
about
that.
They really support post-launch, so.
And they also, they like the feedback we've given them in the past about things.
Yeah,
so.
No, they've always been really, really responsive to community and everything else, so they won't send something out to die.
No, yeah. And that's like a... something I like about their games, and something I was mentioning to Nick, was that I like there's this little bit of a rough, raw kind of PC gaming, like old PC gaming feel to it. Like when you go into the options screen, when you're going through and doing the key bindings, it's not this sort of clean, neat layout that you have with a lot of modern games. It's like you're actually seeing the key commands, or when you put in the gamepad stuff. They have like a little drop down thing where if you download mods from their forums, so like click here and you can just upload whatever mod that you want to use with the game. So it's a nice little friendly interlay that they have with that. Aside from that, I played just a little bit of the Defiance beta and a whole lot of Etrian Odyssey 4, because, as Locke pointed out, I have just gone and get on the grinder.
Yep, just keep walking that treadmill, man.
That's right. I had level 40 characters, I retired them down to level 20s so they could be slightly more powerful, and now I'm grinding them back up to 40.
Terrible things.
It is.
Beautiful.
That sounds awful.
That sounds terrible.
It is so much fun. I don't know why.
So let's see. Locke, what are you up to?
I also played BioShock. I finished BioShock. That was outstanding. Like, just I went through that game and I just looked around just that was my whole experience. Just looked around at Columbia and the characters and everything in that. I was just dumbfounded by it. It was really cool experience. And again, the plasmids. Oh, sorry, Vigors.
real quick, I gotta interrupt. Did you have the same experience? Like, you walk into that first area once you get to Columbia, you're just like, I don't want to leave here. I just want to sit and watch.
Yeah, no, and that's what I did. Like, if you look at my Steam profile, I'm just F12 all the time, baby. just getting so many screenshots. And really, I know it's just, like, not beating a dead horse, but they know how to create a world. Ken Levine does an amazing job with the writing and the world sort of creation. And I thought
5 years of dev time keeps artists real busy.
Totally. And I mean, aside from that, like, that's just way up here. Like, I thought the combat was really fluid too. And that was a cool thing in a BioShock game. Cause that had always been to me sort of a part in BioShock that it was like, oh, okay, you go through the paces of combat, but then you know, you get the good parts, you get the little retelling of the story through other people, you know, you get these awesome, you know, set pieces, but then combat's whatever. But in Infinite, man, like hopping on the skylines, using different vigors and different weapons, I was compelled to always try different vigors. I keep calling them plasmids, but I tried like every different one, and I would switch it up based on what gear I would get. And if you don't know, gear is the clothing that you find that gives you different bonuses. So sometimes it's like you get more damage when you jump down from a skyhook, or you're invulnerable after you kill a dude, stuff like that. And I would change my playstyle to suit whatever gear I got as I found it, which I found was really cool because every single battle was different, and I thought that they really tightened up the fighting in this, which was really refreshing.
It's one of those things. Yeah. I noticed the more I played, and I've just pretty much, I more or less kept my gear the same. If there's a new piece occasionally that I see that I really like, I'll pick up. But I'm realizing more and more, I could stop before every single battle, take a look at what the environment's like, and then change my gear and my playstyle based off what's there. And in fact, when there's not any skylines or skyhooks, I'm a little sad. I'm like,
yeah. But I mean, usually, sometimes, and when you have the tears where you can chuck in stuff by hitting X, like, that adds another element. And that was just really cool, because I would go out of my way to be like, oh, I'm going to try and use this cover now. Okay, I'm going to use that turret. Okay, I'm going to use that hook. And I just thought they did an outstanding job on that. You know, enemy variation was okay. There wasn't that many dudes, but I mean, it didn't matter because every single set piece was different. So I finished it. I was blown away by the ending, and I thought it was just a really super tight game. Really one of the best things I've played ever. And that's not hyperbole. Like, I was legitimately, like, I sat there and looked at the screen. I watched the full credits, which I don't normally do. And yeah, that world's amazing. I'm excited to go back. I had some stuttering issues. I suffered from the NVIDIA problem that a lot of people were having, where every couple seconds it would just stutter, and I did all the hot fixes, couldn't figure it out. So I played through the whole game with this weird stutter. So I'm looking forward to a patch and going through it again. But I mean, yeah, I can't say enough good things about that. So finish it. Go finish that. Like, don't play anything else except for that.
Like I said, after we finish recording, I'll tell you where I am.
I'm excited. Played some Armored Core 5 for some robots. Going to do a little video.
Because robots.
Because robots.
Yes.
But I've got some people in a little clan or whatever you want to call it, a little team in that, and I'm excited to, you know, just pound some metal. And yeah, I'm going to do a good co-op on that soon.
Nice.
And last but not least, dove into the multiplayer of Mass Effect 3 again. I don't have gears. I don't have gears, mind you. So maybe that's the withdrawal of Horde mode or whatever the new mode's called.
Survival.
Sorry. But they added new stuff with the last patch, which came out about 3 weeks ago, I think. 2 or 3 weeks ago. And it's fun. Like, I mean, it's just fun. There's nothing I can add to the conversation about it other than I know it's making them a lot of money, and that's why they've supported it, but giving people something to work towards in a horde mode or a survival mode is really key for the next wave of shooters that do it. Like the character classes, I think, are what keep me back, or keep me coming back, because I can, if I don't want to play as like a support character, I go and play as a melee sort of berserker dude, and there's just so much variation, it changes your playstyle. Whereas something like Gears, I can kind of see what they're doing with the engineer and medic in class, but you're still just shooting dudes in the face. Like, you don't have any powers really or anything. So, but yeah, I mean, just dedicated my whole weekend to BioShock and praising Zombie Jesus, and that was about it. So,
were you saddened to learn that they have finally stopped doing those weekend operations for the multiplayer?
Not sad. I just don't like, one of the things is mostly a personal thing for me, in that I don't like missing out on timed achievements or anything like that, or timed rewards. Like, I'll never be able to get those again. But other than that, it's like, whatever, doesn't matter. There's lots of different medals and commendations that you can get now for every class and everything. So you're always upgrade, or you're always sort of, you know, ranking up in something, which is a great carrot on the stick.
Yeah, I have a few. We have a few friends actually. Some of the COG guys kept playing.
Oh, nice.
The Mass Effect multiplayer, like, they just played it every weekend. Yeah. Every time they had one of those XP events or whatever. And they were all sad to learn that they stopped doing it.
Yeah,
so.
I've got a couple people that are just like, it's really nice to have them around because they know, like, what to buy, what strategies to use, and I'm just like, show up and shoot. So,
which works point really well.
Tell me
too.
What to point my gun at.
Tell me where to shoot things, so. Yeah.
Stick it with the pointy end.
I mean, other than that, trying to get some use out of my Vita, lots of free games. Disgaea popped on, or Disgaea 3 popped on, which is like close to what Jason is talking about with Etrian Odyssey grinding things. Like, you can reset your character level at any time just cuz. Like, great, that sounds awesome. But
yeah, I have Disgaea 1 on the PSP version of that. That's a good go-to game if you just need some strategy.
Yeah, that's what I figured, because I'm still
going into your items.
I still haven't got into my Fire Emblem phase yet, which I will soon. I'm working my way.
You have to play Fire Emblem.
I know.
Amazing.
I will. I'm just working. I'm halfway through.
Lock.
I'm halfway through Paper Mario, and he's just so cute.
He is great.
But that's it for me.
Let's see. Nick, tell us about how great Army of Heroes.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited to hear about this. Good
so,
or bad.
It's not either. That's the thing. It's just. It's,
it exists.
Yeah, it's like a popcorn movie, like, is the best way to describe it. Like, it's cheesy fun. It's not gonna, you know, it doesn't break any barriers, gameplay or anything like that. It doesn't change itself up a ton from the previous games. The biggest difference about it is, and this is, I wrote my review tonight, and actually I'm gonna quote from it because.
Oh,
yeah.
Exclusive
hits
because you can.
This is the Co-Optimist review in progress.
Because I, you know, the whole time before it was out, they're like, you know, this is gonna be a more serious game. The story and the characters are gonna and stuff. But like, someone, like,
didn't they say that about the last one too?
I don't remember. But I said someone is either really good at misdirection or really bad at marketing, because it just.
Maybe both.
Yeah. I don't know, but the game is way, way over the top. Like, it doesn't take itself seriously though. It's much more arcade. There's a lot of references, like a lot of like the fourth wall kind of things being broken, and you know, they talk about video games. Like, when you start shooting, he's like, you know, shoot the red barrels. Why would I shoot the red barrels? Don't you play video games? Red barrels explode.
Right.
Like, there's that kind of stuff, and.
Which sounds like a smart thing for an Army of Two game.
Yeah, no, and there's a lot of that.
It is way more serious than the last game, too, I'm going to say.
Like, there's a lot of, like, laugh-out-loud dialogue. It's just so ridiculous and over the top. And they changed up the formula in general in that the levels, there's 50 levels to the game. But
like
each
set
one,
piece things?
No, there's 50 levels. And each level takes maybe 5 to 6 minutes to complete. So it's real short, real quick. You beat the level, you get all your money, and then you can upgrade your guns real quick or whatever, and then go to the next piece. And it's
so that makes it like a 4-hour game.
I looked at Raptor, and it took me 7 hours.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously some are longer. Some of the set pieces, like there's helicopter missions where you're on the gunner of a helicopter. There's car mission, like they break it up a bit.
helicopter and car missions? Are there co-op doors in this, Nick?
Not that many, actually. And there's
but
not.
Do they exist?
Yes. Because yes.
This and, sounding like and they, sounding like 50 Cent to me.
And that's the feeling I got right away from it, because one, well, it's all the settings in Mexico, so it's kind of got the same motif going on as the Middle East. You got deserts and shanty towns and all that other kind of stuff.
Speaking my language.
But the big thing is, so it's running on Frostbite 2 now. So, you know, if you play Battlefield 3 or any of the other EA games that run on Frostbite 2, the big thing is destruction. So they've added overkill mode, and overkill mode is just like the thing in 50 Cent Blood on the Sand. You fill up a meter, you activate it, and you go into super damage and slow motion and everything else.
Yeah.
And
fucking gangsta bullet time.
It's exactly what it is. And like stuff just explodes everywhere, like cover, pieces of buildings. Like it's a tech demo for Frostbite 2 when you get into overkill mode. It's the best way to describe it.
If you click in the right stick, do they swear?
No, they do not.
Do they high five?
Do they fist bump?
Do they bro out?
That I don't know if they do that. If
does Tony Yayo comment on the Napoleon Napoleonic era architecture?
No
sale.
Overall, so they dialed back the weapon customization. It's still there. There's a lot to do, but they don't have like the crazy like soda can silencer and things like that. But they do have like a ton of skins and stuff for the weapons now. There's a ton of outfits to dress up your guy.
Dress up your dolls, baby.
It's supposed to have a mask customization thing, but it's been offline. So, like, you go, I don't know what the deal is with that. You go into that, and it says, you know, mask customization is currently offline.
So, the window for something like that in a game that we all know is probably not going to sell very well is probably pretty narrow.
Yeah. Dude,
you should look on some of the stuff I made in Army of Two, or Army of Two Two.
Army just of like, Two, 40th day.
When you can dress up your dolls, that just makes a game eternal.
You had some wonderful luchador masks.
So,
yes.
I mean, it's...
of course.
It basically, if you like the previous games, if you had any entertainment from them, you're going to like this. It's a tighter experience. But if you didn't like the other ones, you're not going to like this. It's... Honestly, it almost feels like it should be... Not a budget title, but it doesn't feel like a full $60 title.
Army of Two at $40, you'd sell a ton. Just because... Yeah.
$29.99.
Yeah, even that.
That would be the magic point.
Take the money that you didn't put into the marketing and just like, why not?
Eat the cost.
Yeah, totally.
So, it's, you know, but there's a little bit of replay value. There's a lot of, like I said, so there's 50 missions and each mission has a leaderboard. So you're constantly given that kind of carrot and a stick thing to, you know, go back and do it again, make more money,
nice.
Unlock more stuff kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh man, that sounds rad.
The story's whatever. It's got a couple interesting twists. For me, the highlight is the dialogue. Like, I seriously laughed out loud, and I ruined one of my favorite moments in the review just because I think it is so good, and I think I talked about this in the staff chat. But basically, there's this one scene. You're going down. Like an alleyway, and there's a machine gun at the end. You got to do your normal, you aggro, you go to cover thing to flank it.
Yep.
You get to the end, you get in the machine gun, you start shooting, and the dudes are just pouring over the walls, and you're just mowing them down. And the one guy's like, it's like, man, look how stupid these guys are. They're just running at the machine gun. And the other guy's like, isn't that what we just did? He goes, yeah, but we're fucking awesome. And it's just like, okay.
Jeez. There you
go. And that's like the, you know, that's the level and quality of dialogue you get.
Should have been the demo for the game. It's just that hallway.
We're fucking awesome.
But we're fucking awesome.
That's great.
Nice. No, that sounds good, man. I'm looking forward to your review.
Yeah. But yeah, that's about all I've been playing. A little bit of NHL still.
How's your league going?
Fire Emblem. Okay, we get streaky. We curse EA a lot.
Get streaky.
Yeah.
Does not sound like a good thing.
Streaky cheeky, baby.
Dang.
But yeah. Not much else. Cool.
Nice.
So Mike, would you kindly tell us what you've been playing?
I like what you did there.
A Man Chooses A slave obeys.
So on to the news.
So I've been playing Bioshock. I probably put, I don't know, maybe 6 hours into Bioshock, maybe a little more. I'm playing it on the 360 because my wife really, like, she watched me play the first Bioshock sitting over my shoulder at my computer desk. And when, you know, I told her a new one was coming out, she's got all excited. And my current PC setup is all headphones.
So she can't get the experience.
She can't even watch. So I just got the 360 version. It actually, like, I haven't run into any technical issues. It doesn't look as good as the PC version, but it actually looks better than I thought it would.
Nice.
Which is nice, and it performs, you know, pretty solidly. It's an Unreal Engine game, so those all tend to run pretty well in the 360. I played and reviewed Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, and we'll actually talk about that a little later. And I could talk about Monster Hunter in general and my experiences playing that, because that is kind of like it's a game that you're initiated into, and then you kind of understand what it's all about, and then you choose whether you actually like it or not.
Right,
like Dark Souls.
It's very similar to Dark Souls. It is a game that, like, if you're not playing it right, then the game basically says "fuck you."
Yeah,
you're not going to get anywhere in this game if you don't play by the rules, baby. In some ways, I would actually say it's worse than Dark Souls in that regard, because Dark Souls feels a little more freeform with what you can do, and Monster Hunter is very rigid. So I played that, and my daughter has basically made my purchase of a 3DS totally worth it. She has decided that Mario is the best thing ever, so we get together and she asked me to play Mario.
Your daughter is wise beyond her years.
She is. And so for an Easter present, I bought her Luigi's Mansion for 3DS. Because she really liked what you did there. Yeah. So I played Mario 3D Land, and I unlocked Luigi, and when she saw that I could play as Luigi, she's like, "You're playing as Luigi." Yeah. Cuz she really likes him. So I got Luigi's Mansion, and I'm actually only playing the game when she's watching, and so we're playing the entire game together.
Nice.
And she points out where all the ghosts are, and you know, if I'm wandering around a room for too long, she says, "Daddy, go through that door." I'm like, "No, Daddy, the door's over there. Go over there. Go through that door."
Get it together, Daddy.
Get your shit together, Dad. Got time. You know, she's really, really into it. You know, like whenever there's touchscreen stuff, I hold it up so she can touch the touchscreen. So she's doing a little playing. It's our first real co-op game.
It won't be long before she just grabs the 3DS from your hands. Let me do it.
This is how you play, Dad.
I'm actually kind of cruising eBay to see if I can get like a cheap GBA and some Mario game, like some games for her to play.
Yeah.
So she'll have something to that's more suited for her hands.
How does she do with a regular DS?
I'm saying GBA because the original one is kind of a brick.
Oh yeah, I know.
Okay. Oh right, it's I'm large.
Large. It's large and she can hold it. And the DS, I don't feel like I feel it's a little awkward to hold with little hands.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been doing. Luigi's Mansion is, every time I play a new 3DS game, I'm like, this is the best game on the system. And Luigi's Mansion is really damn good. The 3DS is on a roll this year. Like, Fire Emblem is, until I started playing Bioshock, Fire Emblem was far and away my game of the year.
Which is good, but it's sadly almost 1 year too late for the 3DS to be on a roll.
It's getting its stride, though.
It could be the Vita.
That's true.
At least it's not the Vita.
Ouch.
I love my Vita, but there's no fucking games to play for that thing. You know, Soul Sacrifice is the next thing I'm interested in. And the last thing I played on my Vita was Persona, and that was last November.
Yeah. I play what's free.
Luigi's Mansion is really good. It's actually, I forget the name of the developers, but it's the guys who did the Punch-Out for the Wii.
Right.
And Mario Strikers. So it's not like Nintendo Core. It's one of their first party studios. And it is just charming. Yeah. I can't, like, you're roaming around this mansion and hunting ghosts, and there's this kind of background music. It's a little low key. And then Luigi just starts humming along with it. It's crazy. And yes, Jason, next level games. But it's cool. It's like it's basically an adventure game. But it controls like a third person platformer with no jumping, I guess. But you explore, you find secrets. There's hidden stuff all over the place. You can, find hidden items, and it's, whoever does the treehouse, whoever does their translations,
is awesome.
They're always on fire. Like Nintendo, like since basically the GBA, the crew that's been doing their translation is so good, and this is no different. I really like it. DJ did a co-op review of it and was really up on the co-op mode, so I'm hoping to check that out since it supports download play.
Nice.
But it's cool. Add it to the list of cool games to play on the 3DS. So let's move on and talk about some headlines. And surprise, surprise, despite it apparently being too damn hard, Borderlands 2 got a level cap increase to 61.
Wonderful.
Gearbox told us that would require rebalancing the entire game, and oh gosh, that would be terrible. And yet, a couple weeks after they said that, $5 gets you a level 61 cap and a third playthrough.
That's how you rebalance the game.
Probably.
Just make everything else harder. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so if you already have the season pass, the Ultimate Vault Hunter pack is free, or it's going to cost you five bones, 400 space bucks.
Nice.
And they have, in May, they have a new character called Krieg come in. He's melee focused. He looks kind of like one of the psychos, the bandit psychos. It seems like everyone's a little down on Borderlands now. Not digging that DLC, putting you off the game. What's the story?
Well, what do you think, Jason?
I'm really curious. I don't know why they put out another melee character unless they also have some other things planned around it. Because here's the thing. I love the assassin character. And as the assassin, you can do some really awesome things with his melee stuff, which is really cool in a game about guns. I mean,
yeah, it's not...
it's the best weapon for melee characters in the game is one that you get kind of like as an optional thing from like a side quest, and once you get that, there's no point to really get any other guns or get any other gear for like the rest of the time if that's what you're doing. So I can't quite figure out why they're doing another melee character.
They said he was gonna be like a hybrid, though. It was like I can't remember his other weapon specialty, but he was going to have like a mid-range kind of a thing too.
Well, what if they took the melee character and rather than punch or swing a sword, you just hold the guns like clubs? You beat people over the head with the guns, and the attributes of the guns translate into the melee strike. So if it has explosive damage, you're just swinging explosions in someone's face.
And that'd be awesome, but yeah, I'm sure that would terribly Gearbox? Imbalance the game and cause everything just to go to hell in a handbasket. So
yeah, but $5, but another $5 will fix that.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. So I mean, I don't know.
So is it the DLC or is it just kind of fatigue? Because I remember, here's my experience. I played 60, like probably about 60 hours the original Borderlands. I played through all the DLC. I played a bunch of co-op. I got bored in the middle of Borderlands 2. I got to the part with Bloodwing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I got through that. And I did all of the Captain Scarlet DLC. And then I basically said, you know what? I think I'm done. I have no desire to play any more of this game.
I think it's...
And I'm not sure what it is. Like, everything about Borderlands 2, for the most part, is better than Borderlands 1. And I only had 100 hours worth of Borderlands in me.
But what came out? Okay, so here's the key question. What came out around the same time as Borderlands? as far as not as far as, you know, just general games, but what else came around that had that same loot mechanic? The original Torchlight. So now we've hit Torchlight 2, which is a lot of fun in co-op, Diablo 3, and Borderlands 2 all in the same year. So you got a lot of that sort of loot.
I guess, but I still play Diablo 3.
And I still play Torchlight.
I still play Torchlight 2.
I just don't give a crap about Borderlands, though. I don't know what it is.
They lost a little bit of that magic edge that they had. I mean, when the game first came out, I played a ton of it. I've been playing through the DLC. The third DLC pack, though, really turned me off the game. And it was just because it was like, I don't feel like there's anything left. And now they've announced that, okay, yes, there's a cap increase, but I'm kind of like, now I have to get back into that. I don't really know if it's working.
Now I have to redo another playthrough.
Yeah.
I guess, and they haven't even released the fourth pack for the DLC, or the season pass yet, right?
Right. And then they're also talking about doing another season of DLC, which is I mean, like, I'd totally be on board for if there was something worth going back. I think that's part of it. Why it's lost the magic is you kind of feel like, and what's the ultimate thing? Like, do I feel, you know? I mean, the raid bosses are great and they're cool, but at the same time, there's a lot of people who are just like, it's not worth it. You just don't get good rewards for it.
I think something that would really help Borderlands, like the story stuff they added into was really good, but it was spread too thin and it was not focused around you. You know, like. So there are all those characters you played in Borderlands 1, and you got to know them through the random shit they spout after you blow up an enemy in a spectacular way. And then in Borderlands 2, they flesh them out into characters. So I'm like, I played as Lilith in Borderlands 1. I like the siren stuff. And in Borderlands 2, she had that whole like Firehawk thing going, and that was really interesting. I'm like, oh hey, that was the character I played. That was really cool. I liked that. And then, you know, I played as a siren again. This one, I'm like, so when are you getting interesting, Maya? and I guess never. There's like there's data logs in the world that kind of flesh that stuff out. But it's like, I saw what happened when they turned the characters interesting. Now, like, maybe in the next one, they'll actually make you interesting while you're playing it. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but I find, like, certain games, if there's not something that pulls me along, I don't want to go.
Well, I understand. At the same time, I say the world is actually more interesting because of what they did with the other characters, because you look at games like, I don't know, like, the world around you mostly is the one that that ends up being more interesting, right? Like, even Torchlight 2, like, the world itself and going after the alchemists and that whole thing has really little to do about your character being super cool or awesome or having some deep backstory. It's the world that surrounds it, right? So for these type of games, that's usually how it has to go, is that the world that you enter into has to be interesting enough and keep your attention long enough, which it did through one playthrough. And through a second playthrough, I was just like, I'm just trying to get to level whatever and kill this thing so I can start getting some of the good loot. Oh, and now you just changed all the mechanics of the game. All right, well, at least there's DLC, and oh, the DLC is not fun for anyone who's now level 50, so... Yeah.
See, by the way, let's move on, and, you know, next time Borderlands 2 DLC releases, you know, we'll probably talk about it again. So, Dungeon Defenders, we all really like that first game, huh?
Yeah, it's good. Really fun. It's really fun. Awesome
good,
co-op.
Good, solid co-op tower defense.
Awesome.
What if I told you there was a sequel? What if I told you there was a sequel coming?
I could
be pretty happy about that, right?
April 1st, and you're a liar.
What if I told you that the sequel has a competitive mode?
I tell you that Locke is now buying that game as we speak.
No, it's got to be free to play, doesn't it?
Well,
it is free to play.
There you go. And it's a MOBA.
Okay.
And the co-op modes, it's free to play co-op, but the co-op modes come in later. So I guess the weird thing about this is that there's kind of it's a MOBA set in the Dungeon Defenders world, but the co-op tower defense stuff is also in there, but not right away.
Okay.
And they talked a whole hot mess about how they need to do the free-to-play model to entice players to get into it, and then they'll drop the co-op and none of it actually made a lot of sense to me. I don't know if any of you guys felt that way, but
I thought they were doing the MOBA stuff as like a beta, and that's all. They weren't going to talk about the co-op stuff yet because it wasn't ready, but when the game is out, it would all be out at once.
Maybe. I guess we'll find out, because that's one of those games where we all got it, we all liked it, and then they released a bunch of DLC, and then the inevitable Steam sale hit. I'm like, I can get all this DLC for $6. Why not? I like Dungeon Defenders. And I have played exactly none of the DLC.
Same with me, Mike.
I'm just like, I played 20 hours of this game and I haven't touched the DLC. No,
I haven't even finished the main quest. I have that and I'm like, eh.
It's time we dive back in.
Yeah, maybe. It's fun, though. I like that game, and here's the inevitable podcat.
Meow.
You know,
he likes the game,
meow.
Too.
Get out.
He just wants everyone to know that he likes the game.
Yeah, how do you like Mogwai? How do you like Dungeon Defenders? You like it?
Yep. Yeah, no, that's a weird shift. I don't know, man. Like, I think a free-to-play game like that would be interesting, especially if you can pay like a buck for costumes. Like, why not, right? Like, pay a buck for that costume or that thing, and then just keep supporting it and just get all that revenue from, I don't know, whether it's weapon skins. Like, people pay for that stuff. Like, I mean, that's how other MOBAs survive, but you don't necessarily need, like, you have to compete with League of Legends and, like, Dota and whatever else. Like, those two in and of itself, like, that's some tough competition.
Well, and they hit upon a really good market. People like playing tower defense games, and they particularly they like playing it with their friends. There's no reason to leave that market because, hey, this one's really popular, this one's got, you know, a lot of things. Because, as you said, there's a lot of competition for those two between Dota and League of Legends. That's just sort of like, if you guys got a good thing going, don't try and rock the boat too much.
Mm-hmm. I think what's happening is, you guys remember World of Warcraft came out, and everyone had that, you know, World of Warcraft took off, made a whole ton of money, and then everyone said, Gold Rush! $15 a month MMOs, and almost none of them succeeded, and half of them are all free to, the ones that lasted are all free to play now. And no one ever came even close. Yeah, none of them came even close to replicating the success WoW had. And now you have League of Legends, basically being I guess it's the biggest game in the world at this point.
Yeah, probably, I'd say that.
So League of Legends and, then Dota 2 is kind of the more hardcore alternative. And then a bunch of, like, B-tier stuff that exists. So, like, Heroes of New Earth. And you're starting to see everyone release or announce all these MOBA games. And, like, what do you expect out of this? Are you are you honestly thinking you're going to dethrone League of Legends? A game that has probably, like, 20 million people playing it?
Yeah, but you don't have to. You can
chip
say,
away. Yeah,
I want 5% of that market. Well, 5% of 20 million players is what, 200,000. That's a pretty decent sized thing. And
but
if you're a small studio, then you don't, you know, you're not looking to. You're gonna make money.
Yeah,
know?
Totally.
Like,
yeah,
I guess, but what happened with the WoW model that everyone jumped on is everyone, like, you know, oh, here comes Age of Conan, it's got this combat, and it's going to be really great, and you get everybody play for the free trial, never generate any extra revenue, and they all leave after a month.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people in free-to-play games, they, you know, it's, you know, you might get 5% of League of Legends audience, but you also need the 2% big spenders out of that, and that's a much smaller number. And, you know, I think a lot of people are banking on their, you know, microtransactions getting them this huge financial windfall. And I'm not sure that that's wise.
I don't know. I find with free-to-play games, and exclude Dota from this, but I'll like, test them out and play them. Like, I downloaded Warframe to see what that was like, but I really have no desire to, like, play that more because I have a ton of other games that I have paid for already that I want to play.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, it's just a weird, I don't know if that's normal or if, like, I don't know if that applies to a lot of people that play these kind of things. So.
I think part of it, at least from my perspective, is I'm not the audience for free-to-play because they don't have what I'm looking for in a game. They have the thing that, like, there's no beginning, there's no real beginning and there's no real end, right?
No, it's just like sports game.
Yeah, like, so unless you really want to get into the competitive aspect of it and really fine-tune that, it's not fun because it takes a while to get to the point in those games where you get back from what you put into it, right?
Yeah, it takes a while to get good. And
so unless you're, one, spending the money to get to that point, it's like, eh. But if the other is you spend the time, and then, you know, you're putting 20, 40 hours into this thing to get to that point where, now I'm in the competitive grind and I can go in and it's a rewarding experience. But with so many of them out there, it's like you play the first 2 hours. They don't do a very good job of hooking you in that time. Like Warframe, I played that as well. I played the beta for a bit. It's cool. It's different. But I don't know what I was doing. I don't see what the point of it was. It doesn't do a good job of selling you, okay, here's these missions. Why are you doing these missions? Where do you want to get to with these missions? It's just like,
Go slice around
as a robotic ninja and shoot these robo dudes in space. Okay, I can do that in lots of other games. Why am I going to do it here?
Yeah, you can do that one with a narrative.
Why am I going to play a MOBA that's set in Dungeon Defenders land? Are they gonna make it, you know, infuse the tower defense aspects more into the? I mean, a MOBA is a tower defense game essentially without some of the strategy, right?
Yep,
there's some loose stuff, but. Are they going to infuse some of that into the MOBA aspect of it? Okay, maybe they'll convert some people that played the core game and convert some of the people that play League of Legends and everything else. But why am I going to keep playing?
Yeah.
I think that's the problem with the free to play in general, is why should I keep playing?
Yeah, it's weird because, like, when I don't know if it's just weird. Just like, it needs to hook you, and if it doesn't hook you, then you're lost. So if you go back to the sort of the numbers, you're like, okay, you've got 200,000 people that play your game, but maybe they don't actively put money into the system. So how do you get those people that you've converted to stick with your game to put money into the system? It's like,
I have a friend that really nails it. He said, if something happens with a free-to-play game that turns me off, no matter how big or small, like, say, graphics don't work right? It's having graphic trouble. You have nothing invested in it. You're like, oh, well, I'm done.
Yeah, no loss to you.
No loss. So the littlest problems come up in these games, and they just, people jump ship. They're done.
Totally.
And I think that's a problem. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
Enough free-to-play rant.
So, yeah, let's move on a bit.
Dissecting Dungeon Defenders.
We should have just talked about MOBAs.
This poor little cute game.
So, Battlefield 4 was announced to the surprise of exactly zero people.
Yay, another game where you can shoot dudes.
You can wear up to 4 American flags.
I will pay $10 to wear 8 American flags.
That's going to be the DLC pack.
That will be the second booster pack.
I want
the
Freedom pack now.
Hey. You know what? America, our prime export is freedom.
Okay.
Delivered 3,000 pounds at a time on top of your strategic reserves.
A side of cheeseburgers, too?
Yeah. So they stripped the co-op mode out of Battlefield 4.
Probably a good thing.
Probably a good thing, which means that we would probably not be talking about Battlefield unless one of us ends up playing it.
It looks
probably
sick,
a good
though.
Thing.
Frostbite
it
3
really, it
looks
real
ridiculous.
Nice.
Ridiculous.
Next gen graphics and all that.
Yeah.
Here's something.
Speaking
I'm,
of
I'm,
real quick on that, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
Both Frostbite 3 and Unreal 4 no support for
current gen.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that was what they said.
Making the leap, hey.
Yeah, forced upgrade.
Yep.
Get the $460 games.
Of course.
For the whatever pulls you to the next gen. So this has actually existed in Japan for a while. I think it was a Saturn compilation. But Capcom, back in the day, made a couple Dungeons & Dragons belt-scrolling beat-em-ups They were real awesome, and I can't remember the subtitles of them at the moment. But I played a lot of them in the arcades, and in Japan they had a collection that had them both out for a while, and it's been really expensive to import. And Capcom actually just announced a new collection called Chronicles of Mystara that gets both of those games, and will bring it to Xbox Live and PSN.
Yes.
So I'm pretty excited about that. And while we're talking about, you know, co-op belt-scrolling beat-em-ups, Dragon's Crown has finally been confirmed for U.S. release this summer.
Can you tell me about that? Because I just looked at pictures and I was like, this is something I might need to get into.
It's the pictures, or
did you play Odin Sphere or Muramasa?
Yeah.
Okay, it's those dudes.
Okay.
The crazy art style, and it's basically their take on Golden Axe.
Sold.
It's a four player. There's six character classes. There's four player co-op. So
beauty.
We should do marketing. Cool.
And there's some righteous cleavage in that game.
Wonderful.
As there are in all of that guy's art.
I really need to get back into Odin Sphere.
And by get back, you mean restart?
I am pretty much. I'm super hyped to check out. Because they're re-releasing Muramasa as a Vita game, and that game, I have the Wii version, and it was pretty sweet.
Dude,
but
you're dropping truth style, bombs on me today.
Yeah, man,
that's awesome.
So Muramasa for Vita, I think it's called Muramasa Rebirth, is coming this year as well, and that'll be good.
You can cut
that
Muramasa,
that's a game that probably could have used.
I'll buy
that
it.
Game probably could have used co-op, but it's pretty fun. And it's just drop dead gorgeous.
Subtitle Battlefield 4.
here's some sad news. Remember a couple of years ago when all we were talking about was the next Plastic Instrument music game to come out?
That's all Mark was talking about.
As all Mark was playing, we had all these revolving reviews and we kept talking about all the DLC songs that were coming out. Well, they finally stopped releasing songs for Rock Band, I believe Dance Central as well.
Somehow,
really?
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the surprising news to this. I thought that had ended like 1 year, maybe 2 years ago. So this is the new story for me. You start releasing stuff.
Yeah, I'm just dropping truth bombs left and right. So they have finally released the last Rock Band track, and it was American Pie.
Oh, how fitting.
Corny.
Oh,
it's,
come
it's
on,
pretty
man.
Corny. It, you know. What are you gonna do? I mean, they already put Final Countdown in Lego Rock Band.
It's true.
So yeah. And to wrap things up. During Walking Dead last night, there was a premiere of a Dead Island trailer.
Oh, yeah, freak! This is awesome. Because I was there.
There was a Dead Island trailer, Dead Island Riptide, during the Walking Dead, and a little website called Co-Optimus got quoted. In the commercial.
I think it was only... I found the commercial online. It was just IGN and us, I think, were the two quotes.
Nice. Basically the only two outlets
in the industry. Those are the big two sites. I mean, IGN's IGN, but, I mean, we're fucking Co-Optimus.
Yeah.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah, I DVR'd
it. That was a nice surprise.
Yeah, I DVR'd it, and I saw the commercial as I fast-forward, but I didn't stop. And then...
Someone called you.
I had like six text messages. I just saw Co-Optimus on Walking Dead. I'm like,
on
what
TV?
Are you talking about? Like,
April Fool's is tomorrow, you guys.
Yeah.
Come on.
So that was pretty cool because we get. I'd say, you know, it's not often, but we have to say, yeah, you can use a quote, kind of a thing. We get emails and stuff, but 9 times out of 10, it never actually makes it to the marketing material. So,
where did that quote come from?
It was Andrew's PAX Prime preview of the game.
Yeah.
So if you wish to check that out, PAX 2012, Dead Island Riptide, Eyes On Impressions, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Something like that.
So that's the news, unless anyone's got anything they want to add.
No.
All right. Let me talk for a couple minutes about Monster Hunter, because this has been the year of esoteric Japanese RPGs, action RPGs that try and ape things out of Western stuff. So this was the year I played, you know, 60, 70 hours of Dark Souls. You know, I played 40 hours of Dragon's Dogma. And I said, you know what? I might as well move on to Monster Hunter.
Might as well hit the hard stuff.
All right.
And
where's
the
crack?
Monster Hunter actually makes me appreciate Dragon's Dogma a lot more.
How so?
Because, well, I'll swing back to that. So Monster Hunter is basically its own damn genre in Japan. It's a series that's so self-contained that it doesn't really share many attributes with other games. So if you know how to play a Monster Hunter game, I actually had it compared to, like, you know how you play your first FPS and you're kind of struggling with learning how it works, and then now anytime an FPS comes out, you're just give me the controller, I know what to do. That's basically what Monster Hunter is. It's like, if you know, all these people grew up playing the early Monster Hunter games, so when the new ones come out, they don't explain shit because all this, it's a genre.
Right.
So it essentially has its own rules that people, you know, learn. So Monster Hunter, if you don't know, is basically a freeform action RPG where you basically just run out into a series of areas and kill monsters until you're powerful enough to kill bigger monsters.
Monsters like Frankenstein, Dracula, and the werewolves?
No, more like dinosaurs and more bigger dinosaurs and even bigger,
like,
dinosaurs.
And dinosaurs
and dragons.
That shoot smaller dinosaurs from a gun.
And you know, swimming dinosaurs.
Why not, right?
So why isn't it called Dinosaur Hunter?
Because,
well, there's rabbits in there too, Nick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because there's a rabbit with a turtle shell.
Why not?
So he's
and
like a monster.
There's like a bear with rock armor.
But
like,
when
there's other monsters.
When you finish the game, you learn that the real monster is man.
Yeah, and the most dangerous game. So there's all these. There's this basically these series of monsters in it, and The daunting thing about these games is you're basically dumped in with zero tutorial. Like, it's you're basically given every weapon type in the entire game. You're not explained at all that carrying a weapon changes your class, because there are only two actual classes in the game. So you're either ranged or melee, and that's your class. But what weapon you're carrying in either mode is basically your subclass. So you could run around with a two-handed sword, or dual daggers, or a sword and a shield, or a spear and a shield, and each one of those gives you an entirely different set of moves, and completely changes the way you play your character. Game never tells you this. It's just how it works. And every single thing you kill drops about three or four different types of item, and there's stuff you can harvest in the world that each harvesting node drops several different kinds of thing, and you carry all this crap back to town and you make better gear out of it, and all the while you're completing quests to kill, like, go kill X monsters or go gather X resources, or now you're badass enough to go take on this giant monster. And so you're about 3 hours into the game before you actually get a quest to kill a giant monster, and that's when everything clicks. That's when you understand this is why people play Monster Hunter, is the thrill of fighting the huge bosses, because that is eventually that's all the game becomes, is tracking and fighting these giant monsters.
Right.
And so you'll roll through the world, and the first one you find is a great Jaggy. It's this big, like, giant ass, you know, velociraptor. And when you're fighting the big monsters, it does things like, you actually get a different type of camera control. Like, you can swing the camera around and you know, control it, but when there's a big monster, you can actually pin it to the boss. You can't do that to a normal enemy, so you can do this weird lock-on thing. And you're fighting these monsters, and it's like this enormous battle of attrition. These fights take, like, 20 minutes. You know, you bring them down to a certain amount of health, and they'll visibly, like, their attack patterns will change. They'll visibly look tired, but then they'll do things like flee from you, and you have to expend consumables to do things like trap them, or, you know, mark them with paint, which, you know, allows you to track where they're moving, because each area is split up into like 10 zones, and they can appear in any zone after they run away, and if you don't track them quick enough, they regen all their hit points, And so you're fighting all these big ass monsters and killing them, taking the loot, making new armor, and so on. And that is the entire game. It's a one huge exposed treadmill.
Wonderful.
And
get on and grind.
So as a gross single player game, it's really tedious and boring. Like you get through a few sessions of that, you're like, I get it. But then you play it in co-op. You go, and the co-op content is all slightly different. You know, it shares all the same areas, you fight all the same monster types, but in the single player, it's all framed. There's no real, there's the skeleton of a story, but it, you know, basically has you do all this stuff in sequence. But in co-op, you, like, once you've leveled your, you know, monster hunting rank high enough, you can take on any quest in whatever order you want, play it in four-player co-op, and the game just, it absolutely shines in co-op. So what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, yeah, like, how does that feel? Because it sounds like the perfect mix of, like, challenging, but, like, you get a group of friends together and it's the perfect game.
So in games like Dark Souls, for instance, I forget where I heard the term first coined, but they start talking about animation priority. You know how in fighting games or third person, Devil May Cry type stuff, you start your attack combo and then you see an enemy attack coming and you cancel out and dodge. In Dark Souls, you swing your weapon and then the next button you pressed happens.
Right.
So you have to finish what you're doing before you start another action. Monster Hunter is the same way, but even more restrictive. So I mash in a combo and then I dodge. You'll swing your weapon 5 times in sequence before the dodge goes, and then you'll get hit. And the two-handed weapons and the slower weapons swing incredibly slowly. So if you miss, you're left, because the animation has to play completely out. If you miss, the enemy will just punch you right back, and it gets very difficult unless you're playing with a really fast weapon solo. Playing in co-op makes all of those problems go away because the monsters will not be focused on you 100% of the time. Like, you have to do things like your weapon will dull mid-battle, and you'll start doing, like, half damage, then half as much again. And it's super, super difficult that way because you're fighting a guy and he's just on you and you're not doing any damage because you have to sharpen your weapon. So you have to damage them enough so they run away, or you have to run away and hope that the zone change gives you enough time to sharpen your weapon. And if you didn't tag them with a paintball and you leave the zone, then they might move and then you lose track of them and then you've lost 20 minutes of progress.
So what you're saying is, in the middle of these giant boss fights, you're like, hold on a second, and you pull out this whetstone and just like,
it's literally, excuse me, bad guys, I'm all out of air. And then you pump up your pumps and get back in.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Which this may lead to your sort of final thing, but what's going to make the common man pick this game up? Because from what you...
Having friends to play with.
So you have to get... You have to get a dedicated...
Let the man finish his question.
You basically have to trick 3 of your friends that you don't want to be friends with anymore. Like, and then you play the game and they're like, oh, this is cool, let's do this all the time. But...
Basically, like you...
Alcohol helps.
Well, it doesn't, because you'll be swinging like an idiot.
I just meant to convince them to play the game in the first place.
Fair enough.
No, so how it... It's one of those things where you have to count... Like, it's like I was saying with Dark Souls. Like, there's this point when everything clicks and you understand it. And once you hit that point, all the other problems go away. Because you understand how the various systems in the game work. And then you go and play the co-op. And just do nothing but play co-op, and you'll have a great time. I reviewed the game. I give it a really high co-op score and kind of an average. You know, I think I give it a 3 as a regular game. And just playing it in co-op, like fighting the giant monsters is really fun. They all behave very differently, and it's very challenging. And beating one feels like an achievement. It's like when I was starting to really understand Dark Souls, and I would. I'd play in co-op, and then I just like, I'm gonna fight this guy on my own. And then I beat that guy on my own, and I'm like, yeah, I'm fucking pro, I understand this. And you hit that, like, you hit that point in Monster Hunter where you're like, I get everything this game wants me to do, I understand all of it, and playing it with everyone else who also understands all this shit is great. You know, all the every co-op experience I had was amazing, and because fighting the bosses is thrilling, but when you're playing co-op, you don't have to deal with the bullshitty stuff. Like, yeah, you have time to take a break. You have a couple moments to, you know, switch what, you know, like, in between missions, you're like, all right, I didn't like how my weapon worked. I'm going to go and, you know, purchase a new one, or, you know, just try this one out on for size. And you don't feel like you're losing progress. Like, you might not contribute to the group as much while you're learning a weapon, but you don't sit there feeling like you're just bashing your head repeatedly against the wall experimenting.
So there's no, like, AI guys you can hire to help
there
you?
There are. Or... eventually, you get a couple AI dudes that help you, but by the time you get them, you would have graduated to playing the co-op.
Gotcha.
Right.
And it does help. It does end up helping out, but I just, like... I hit a point in that game where I probably played like 5 hours of single player, and then I played, you know, 6 or 7 more hours in all co-op. And once I started touching the co-op, I didn't want to even go near the single player, because it's the mechanics are all the same, but it's an entirely different game.
Gotcha.
So, and the glorious thing about Monster Hunter is that once you've played one of them, when the next one comes out,
you're in.
You already know how to play it.
Right.
So you don't you can essentially jump straight into the co-op in this game. Like, you have to do a couple of quick things before it unlocks, but that's maybe 20 minutes. And, you know, it unlocks it basically right from the start. And it's fun. I liked it. I'm actually going to, once I have a spare moment, I'm actually going to send Locke the 3DS copy so he can check it out.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of use that as my litmus test to basically decide if I want to buy a Wii U for it. Because, again, I don't have anyone here to play with, so I would be looking to do it online. And again,
I'll play with you, Locke.
Yeah, it's always... I've kind of dabbled in them, and I've always been... I really like that feeling. Like, I attributed it to Shadow of the Colossus, the boss rush mode that they have. Yeah. And you do get that rush of adrenaline, and just that sense of achievement is like none other. And I think that's all you get in Monster Hunter. You get that, you know, that thrill of the hunt. And then finally when you know, it is a grind, but at the same time, it's just like you're getting just rewarded every time. So,
yeah. And when I said it made me appreciate Dragon's Dogma even more, is Dragon's Dogma is another game from Capcom, and it's basically like it takes the boss fights and punctuates kind of a, I wouldn't say an Elder Scrolls, like a Western style third person action RPG. Like, there's the big world, open world to explore, and you'll stumble across a boss monster in the world, and you'll fight the boss monster for 30 minutes. And it's so it gets that same feeling, and I really like Dragon's Dogma, but now that I play Monster Hunter, I realize that Dragon's Dogma is like Monster Hunter, but more attuned to what I care about
right.
in a game like that. Like, it doesn't have the co-op aspect, so it you know, you don't have that going for it, but Dragon's Dogma the thing it does is it gives you all this stuff, but it doesn't have any of the animation priority things. Like, you can cancel out of moves, you have crazy combos, you have all the, you know, different character classes, you can swap between them at will. It has a lot of the same things, but it just the feel of the game is different enough that I enjoyed it a lot better.
Nice.
A lot more as a solo experience.
Oh, it's cool to hear, man.
So that's Monster Hunter. It's good, but if you don't have friends to play with, I hope you like playing with randoms. Because I would not play it solo.
Then there's also Monster Hunter 4 for the 3DS that's going to have online co-op, right?
Yeah, but that's not coming to the US yet.
Yeah.
It's coming out. Like, we just got Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, or Monster Hunter Tri-G, as it's known in Japan. And they're getting Monster Hunter 4 really soon, so we'll probably get Monster Hunter 4 next year. Yeah. So this will last you for now.
Hmm.
And I think that's going to do it for us today, unless anyone has anything they want to add.
Wrap it up!
Let's wrap up. So we got some smartphone apps for iOS Windows Phone 7. Does Windows Phone 7 app work on Windows Phone 8, Nick?
I don't know. I have to find someone who has Windows Phone 8 to test it.
That's a good question.
My wife has a Windows Phone 8. I will have it tested.
It should.
Maybe. If you'd like to hear the answer to that question, please call our number at 646.
There's also an Android app. You can buy some damn t-shirts from Split Reason, if there are any left. You leave us feedback on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at CoOptimus without the dash. You can call Locke's cheat code hotline.
Call me up.
646-926-6748.
Operators are standing
by. Dropping them digits.
I will tell you how to get infinite one-ups in Mario 3.
Okay. And that's it. That's the only
that's tip. All you get. That's the only tip I know.
I got nothing else. I was going to say something snarky, but Locke stole my thunder.
Oh, sorry, buddy.
So that's Co-Opticast episode 104. We will see you again in
2 weeks.
A week or two. Peace.